the Sofia Soloists Chamber Ensemble, conducted by Vasil Kazadyev, and their interpretation of Vivaldi's second movement, the Largo from Spring, from the Four Seasons, of course. And as we move from spring, or possibly La Primavera, to a young lady, an author, and let's be honest, we refer to her as a Renaissance woman for the 21st century. She's already delighted us with the glass blower of Murana, the Madonna of the Almonds. This year produced a rollicking tale, which I think surprised one or two people, but still more than capably emerged as the third of her novels to actually achieve the accolade of being an official South Side Book of the Month, of course, The Botticelli Secret. Without any further ado, we say author extraordinaire Marina Fiorato, are you indeed there?
I am here. Good morning.
Fantastic. Good to touch base with your good self once again, Marina. So, it seems like only yesterday we were talking about, you know, the Madonna of the Almonds, the Glassblower of Murano, talking about the Lincoln Book Festival. You were coming up to make your debut, obviously, up at Teesside at the Martin Library. And look, lo and behold, on the 26th of July, thank heavens, you'll be back with us again, effectively.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I'm coming up again. Yeah. Very much enjoyed it last year.
Yeah, you see, I mean, there are folk who say that actually, you know, we're looking forward to see stuntman Ricky Ash, Stephen Machat, of course, with his work with Frank Sinatra and Frankie Valli, and James Brown, who's coming up. Sarah Waters, of course, who has been on board. Graham Harper, a good friend from many directorial events. Michelle Monroe, daughter of Matt Monroe. But for me, the highlight, Monday the 26th of July, Marina Fiorato, Martin Library, 3:30. Crucial that you're actually there. Absolutely wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Let's move on to the Botticelli Secret. Fascinating in so many ways, because I kind of initially, when I read through it, and again I have to say it's slightly longer than the previous two, I think, in the series, but nonetheless more wonderful for that. And I was getting a sense of the Romancing the Stone, Jewel of the Nile, Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas things crossed with the Da Vinci Code, but with protagonists who are surprisingly young in their own way.
Yes, they are. Well, I was just, it all came from the painting, actually, because the heroine is the model for Flora in the painting. So I was really taking my cue from that, really, and that she's obviously a very young and beautiful woman. And I always thought she had a very sort of cheeky, earthly look about her, and that's really why I cast her in this slightly controversial role as prostitute.
I mean, there are a couple of little lines that came through which I really appreciate. One line, which she was like a virgin, touched for the very first time.
Yes,
I thought, where'd you get that line from then?
You know, I thought, I wonder if I get away with that. I'm very glad you spotted that, because I did think how fantastic it would be if I could just
worked it in
there. Slide a little bit of Madonna in here.
And even when she actually discovers her Vera Martre, they're actually in the Venetian boat, I thought, all we need is a video crew now, and it's it. You know, it's taken directly from that
Absolutely.
Point of view.
Absolutely. Oh, good. I'm glad you got that.
we genuinely work our way through these. And, of course, another classic line was there. I think there's also an acknowledgement of the Madonna and the line from that, and a sort of thing that ties back to the Madonna of the Almonds. This is becoming, in a sense, its own genre with 15th century Italy. And as I pointed out when we were doing the Book of the Month, I was delighted you did have a print of La Primavera by Botticelli on the back, because one finds oneself consistently referring back to say, is that really Pisa?
Yeah.
Are they positioned in that scenario? It would have been much more challenging, I think, had we not had that kind of visual thing to keep coming back to sort of say, oh, right, that's what the wind's all about. That's where it's pointing through, really.
Yeah, I think I knew that, of course, a lot of people would be familiar with the painting, but even to be familiar to that extent, you know, just to, if I was to have to express every single thing that, you know, I was talking about in that amount of detail, I think it probably would have detracted from the storytelling, because you would have had to be so, you know, pin sharp with all the detail. I think it really does help having that visual clue there.
It would have been like Sister Wendy Beckett, but with a different line entirely.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
It's where we're going with this particular thing. One of the things that certainly surprised a couple of readers that I know sort of followed this through was the, shall we say, more colourful language that's used by some of the characters within that, even to the extent of saying, Marina, what's happened here? She's gone all potty-mouthed on the whole thing. Is this the influence of Danny Boyle, I'm thinking? Are we going for train spotting in the routine? Clearly that must have been a conscious decision to say, OK, fine, we're dealing with a girl who's been a prostitute since she was effectively 12. She's been working in that field. She's 16 at this particular stage. You've got a lot of other issues there that come through the whole experience side of things. So, the first way in which she encounters, of course, Brother Guido, I wouldn't recommend it as the best way forward in terms of how to actually make friends and influence people with men. But there we are. That's all I shall say.
No, quite right.
Yeah.
The language was always... I never really asked myself that question. I wrote her sort of from the heart as a character, and it never really occurred to me that she wouldn't be this extremely earthy, very sort of frank language. And I just wrote her sort of as I wrote her. And then, of course, when we came to publishing the book, I did sort of ask myself a few questions, and my American publishers in particular were a little bit worried about it, because in Middle America, obviously, there's another sway,
and I was thinking at that time, when Brother Guido and Luciana effectively encounter the brother-in-law, shall we say, the lush, and the certain thing that's occurring, I thought, ooh,
I would, yes. I did catch it from my mum for a few things that are in that book, I'll tell you. But no, I think at the end of the day, I just have to be very true to the character. And how would somebody speak if they were on the streets, essentially? And that's her currency. Every day, you know, she's encountering, you know, various sort of sexual acts, and she's encountering just the sort of gutter of Florentine life. And I just thought, the other reasoning behind it was, of course, that she's diametrically opposite to Brother Guido, who's extremely well-spoken, and he's extremely erudite, and I just wanted that contrast between the two of them. But she does get better, I will say, novel.
I was thinking...
She cleans up her act.
It was rather like a Renaissance version of Ladette to Lady.
There you go.
With Liz Brewer possibly taking on a different line in the sort of etiquette stakes, which I'm sure we can work through.
And she does... It's just the influence of this man, and I think she rubs off on him a little bit, but he rubs off on her linguistically, I would say. She's certainly cleaner by the end of the book.
Yes, I'm glad you said linguistically, otherwise it's the adjective of clauses. Like I could almost hear Lynn Truss turning around and say, for goodness sake, sort it out. What's the meaning? Where's the meaning on this particular basis? Is it a colon? Is it a semicolon? What's happening? One of the things we always like to do, and I must admit it's a wonderful challenge, we took a couple of excerpts for the book of the month, but it's the random selection thing, Marina. So would you like to select...
Oh, are you sure?
With the caveat and the slight scenario that clearly if we do have any fruity language, I might clearly substitute. So, exactly. Precisely. So would you like to give me a page number?
Let's think. I was just thinking maybe if I went further towards the end of the book.
So playing safe to a certain extent.
She might be a little bit cleaner.
Okay.
But at the same time as well, it's difficult because this is the sort of book
you don't want to give too much away, precisely so.
So I don't want to go too near the end of the book. What about 242.
So, yeah, that's pretty much sort of halfway through that whole thing as we work our way through this. Obviously, bear in mind, we've got an interesting piece of dialogue here, so let's go with this. The next time he sees me, I took up the tale at court. I am now with Lord Silvio's son, Niccolo, a man magnificently dressed, clean-shaven, and a million leagues away from a penniless monk. Lord Niccolo wears the thumb ring and closely resembles Lord Silvio. The leper believes that you are loyal to the Alliance, and that now your father, the rotten apple, is gone. Forgive me, he may merely observe our progress. He was not pursuing us when we ran from the Pantheon, I admitted, and he has not revealed your true identity because he does not know it. Brother Guido concluded, the leper thinks you have changed sides and are in the pockets of the Seven. He follows you but does not act. He fell silent for a time, a silence which told me he thought my theory possible. Then he abruptly changed his theme. Yet all this conjecture wastes time. Whether or not another party gives us away, we will give ourselves away if we do not meet the king tonight. At midnight? Yes. We must change our tack from this discourse and apply our faculties to the more immediate problem. We cannot know for sure the leper's business, but we have very pressing business of our own, namely that in less than 2 hours... we must meet Don Ferrante at a place that we do not know the location of, and my only plan to discover the whereabouts of our tryst has been wrested from me. Speak Tuscan! I meant only that, since Don Ferrante must himself go to that place at the hour of midnight. My notion was to follow him there. But he was meeting with his officers first. Yes, We could have waited and followed him again to the appointed place, but now, since we fled the Pantheon in Ura, there is no way of knowing for sure where the meeting of the Seven will be. Yes, that's interesting. I don't know, Marina, did that sort of begin to do justice to a past that takes us out of the Rome catacombs and the battles through and the sort of the introduction to the Pope and
all
sorts
of things? I was going to say, it's clear as mud, that, isn't it? It's hard to know what's going on there, but It is all explained.
It's the random page sampler test.
It is, and it's no swear words, thankfully. No. That was very well chosen.
Yeah, and also some quite nice dialogue because I think it's written very much from the perspective of Luciana Chichi. Yeah. There is that sort of perspective. I mean, I think if the one thing you can guarantee if you're looking for a strong female heroine, this character is coming across. I was interested in terms of the acknowledgements. Really, that does seem to have been a bit of a Fiorato family development, this really, in so many yeah. ways, because you have your sister Veronica, who was providing assistance on all things Roman, presumably including the catacombs and so on. Brother-in-law Richard Brown on naval history, and godfather volcanologist Alwyn Scarfe for the information on the effects of earthquakes.
It's crazy, isn't it? Now, luckily, I don't know by what chance, but a lot of my family, well, My sister and brother-in-law are archaeologists, and they trained together and met together at University of York, and they both have different specialisms, and they luckily were able to help me with those bits. Yeah, and then my godfather is a volcanologist, so he was able to tell me what it would be like, you know, to experience an earthquake and nature's signs, you know, the way the birds fall silent, and there are tidal waves, and it was very, very useful having all these people happy to help, which was fantastic.
Ah, indeed. Let's mention your mum, of course, Barbara Fiorato, who tracked down various biblical references with the assistance of Reverend Roger Wood.
That's our village vicar, actually. And she was asking him about, you know, references to serpents in the Bible, and he was just very happy to help. And yes, I'm very grateful to have all these people rallying round.
And indeed, even your father, Adeline, read the proofs and highlighted many attempts to rewrite Renaissance history.
Yeah, interesting. Of which there are many. Yeah, well, no, he's quite a stickler, actually, because he's an academic, and he says, oh, well, no, this wouldn't have happened, and that wouldn't have happened, and so he puts me straight on quite a lot of things.
I mean, there is always that perspective when you're writing from the 21st century about events that took place in the 15th century. And I was interested because looking at the times that we're talking about here in terms of the dates 1482 and so on, and I was thinking, well, actually, some of the time at present in Britain, of course, we have the Henry VII handover to Henry VIII. Mm. We've got that because that was very much, again, from my own sort of educational background, the sort of history, Tudors and Stuarts, and the kind of English history that was actually there. And the only notion one had about characters such as the Medicis, and obviously the onset of Machiavelli and the Prince and so on. And I think, although you don't mention Machiavelli as such, I think that there is these notions that there are lots of wheels within wheels that are breaking down. I mean, there's one particular aspect that comes through which, without sort of addressing too many plot lines, the notion of Flora, when she says, I'm sure I remember something on this coin, and it had an I, and it had a T, and you know, I thought, it's Italia. I was almost into a World Cup theme, you know?
Absolutely.
Different line on that page. I thought the Azzurri have come to hold thing. but again, I think you managed to develop that and certainly provided an input, an insight into an era which, I mean, again, I'm amazed. Well, presumably, as I say, I know deals are afoot already to actually talk about cinematic versions of same, but I mean, there's a whole wealth of material that can be developed within that field.
Yeah, I think so. And it was very interesting writing about that moment in history and the fact, as you alluded to, the whole city-states and the machinations between them all. And that was very interesting. And as you say, that it's probably happening all over Europe because France at that time was fractured and we had our issues here with the union of Great Britain, etc. It's a fascinating period of history. So I do think that is why it throws up such drama and such characters. I think the element of competition was very strong in Renaissance Italy between the city-states, and I think that's why there was this huge proliferation of amazing artists and writers, and it was a very rich period, and I think competition had a direct impact on that.
And, of course, the notion that many of the artists at the time, without the patronage of wealthy citizens who clearly had their own form of vanity publishing and other aspects, without that particular patronage, then the arts would not have existed as we've come to appreciate them 400 or 500 years later.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, the Medici were absolutely instrumental in having their academy in Florence and bringing forth all these amazing artists. Mm. But I suppose that's very contemporary in a way, because if anyone talks about the arts today, the one issue is always funding. You know, can I get my film made? Can I get my, you know, my theatre production put on? Or and it's always the same.
Can we do another radio show? It's all up to all sorts of things. So we thank our sponsors on a regular basis
exactly,
for that.
And this, you absolutely do need that. Patronage is still a very big issue in the arts.
Or as we like to say at Soundside Marina, patronage, not patronising.
Exactly.
Very important. You know, got to keep that balance right from that perspective.
Yes, this is it. Yeah.
OK, in the studio we have Evan Canwell. Evan, I don't think you've actually encountered Marina's work before, but what are your initial thoughts? What questions have you got for Marina?
I'm quite interested by the fact that it says you include major figures such as Leonardo da Vinci. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, in Botticelli's Secret, I loved the way, in the same way as you included Leonardo da Vinci beforehand, also the way in which you work in, of course, chap we were featuring earlier on in the show today with Goodbye Columbus, the association, of course, Christopher, who went off in 1482 and you know, launched a whole new world.
Yeah.
Nicely dressed in that one, you know, very well incorporated. Pity about what happened to his friend with respect to the castration scene, but never mind.
Yeah. You know? There's a little trailer for everyone.
Exactly.
But back to Leonardo. Well, I included him in this one. He was actually in Madonna of the Almonds as an old man, as a sort of a mentor to my main character. But in this book, he's a little bit younger, and I actually don't feature him as an artist. I feature him in one of his very interesting other roles, which was as a sort of an engineer and an inventor in the Milanese court. And this is absolutely true, that he was working in Milan and he was coming up with these fantastic ideas for siege machines.
It's a Trident missile.
Well, it is. He is the sort of he's the Oppenheimer sort of thing. He's sort of doing all this amazing stuff that quite a lot of people aren't really aware of, and I wasn't really until I started looking into it. But as well as inventing, you know, the helicopter or, you know, the parachute or the other things that we may be aware of, he was actually also looking at cities and how cities should be built and how siege machines should be built. And it's fascinating. His life as an engineer then was almost as prevalent as his life as an artist.
That's
why he was in there, really.
And rightly so. And as we said, just the way in which sort of it connects together, I thought it's, as I say, Indiana Jones in all manner of wonderful ways.
Yeah, thank you. I love that movie.
Well, there we are, exactly. All we needed in your next text is for somebody to actually say, so what are we going to do now? And the response, I don't know, I'm making it up as we go along.
Yeah, exactly. Which is essentially writing encapsulated in that one phrase, isn't it?
Well,
you sort of make it up as you go along.
It's an interesting line. I mean, the workshops that we've had, I mean, obviously we're coming up to halfway through the second Middlesbrough Literary Festival, which is ticking on quite nicely. And obviously we're more than happy to be supporting that actively here at Southside Broadcasting, as we do with Siren FM as well. But interesting enough that after the masterclass from your good self, Marina, at Martin Library at 3:30 on the 26th of July, later on that evening we have another friend of Southside, Marion Husband, who will be producing a writing workshop, talking about how to write dialogue, how to explore viewpoints, and, of course, editing your work effectively. I think three skills which are fairly crucial, because ultimately it's a case to just sort our way through this. There's one little question that sprung to mind again from the Book of the Month feature on Botticelli's Secret, the mother. Now, we know that mothers can be challenging in various ways, but she does seem to go through a kind of vault fast to becoming everybody's favourite granny after a time, really.
Well, yeah, she's... I wanted her to not be a black and white character exactly. I wanted her to... She's extremely complex in that, really, she's kind of out and out evil for a lot of it. Yeah. But then I wanted her to almost be likeable. She's just so bold, and she is the sort of only female ruler, as it were, in this collection of men who are ruling the city states at the time. So I sort of wanted her to be a strong character, but not necessarily anybody's role model, because...
In the traditional Margaret Thatcher sense of the words, she actually had the cojones to actually use those, actually work through those things.
Literally,
as she's referred
point,
to. Yeah, quite rightly so, exactly.
But no, I wanted her to be quite, at the end, to begin to sort of turn around and begin to regret the way that she'd done things and maybe to come to the conclusion that her family was important to her.
Yeah. With or without the mask, of course, which is a different line entirely. But and now we can go into the mask things. Marina, it's been fabulous just touching base with you. Actually, I'm just thinking, because I appreciate, obviously, the audiobooks available of fantastic Glassblower of Murano and Madonna of the Almonds. I'm thinking there must be a sort of way here in which we can actually bring on board the Fiorato family and actually do a series of kind of your own thoughts and perspectives on this Renaissance Italy feature. So,
that'd be great. Anytime.
I thought, you see this magical little moment here. I think we could look towards this. So we'll talk in various other sort of bits and pieces. But two final crucial questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us once again here at Southside Broadcasting?
Certainly, it's always a pleasure, actually, and I do love the random page selector.
You see,
definitely a highlight.
I think it's fair to say that there are other stations that produce book reviews and other channels and so on that might have slightly bigger budgets, bigger patrons, whatever. But I think we're fairly unique in doing that, Maria.
Yes, I think you are. I've never heard that anywhere else.
Well,
so,
there you go.
Yeah,
you see, it's the sort of tightrope routines. So the next crucial question is, apart from clearly connecting together on the 26th of July, 2010, in case you're... again, using this podcast, you want to play the whole thing back again, etc., at the Middlesbrough Literary Festival. Of course, reminder for the website, www.marinafiorato.com, which is all well worth accessing. Can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again in the very near future?
I'd love it. Anytime, yeah, absolutely. I always enjoy it.
Fantastic stuff. And in fact, the final routine is actually we'll put you in the role of music producer here. We'll give you a couple of options. Oh, we'll give you three options. What the hell? I have a sense I know which one you're going to go for, actually.
Okay.
I do have a sense I know this. Okay. We can offer you either Paul Mauriat and his orchestra with Love is Blue, a kind of cerulean theme from that point of view. We can offer you Noel Coward with Mad Dogs and Englishmen. Nothing to do with the Renaissance, but it's a nice little line, and we thought we'd throw it in there. Or Madonna and Like a Virgin. Where are you going to go?
Oh, yeah, it's got to be that one, hasn't it? Since it's in the book, yeah, absolutely.